Grit is so relieved he almost staggers. Then he's livid. He needs to grab Stratton's reins, but this is not the time. Strat gets up, a wry look on his face, and comes to meet him. Stratton and Ishard pass in the narrow doorway between rooms. Strat leans on the doorframe between her front room and the next.
"Did the boys get back to you all right, Fox?"
his face says. "Don't make a fuss." What can Crit say? Strat's not streaming blood from that street fight over the ghost horse's manners. All his limbs are intact. Except for the ripped wool of his chlamys and the bloodstains, there's not a mark on him. Not with her here to spellbind everything to her taste and everybody to her will.
"Those young fighters were pretty spooked. Are you hurt?"
"I'm fine, Crit.
I skinned my knuckles."
A dry smirk flashes. Strat shows Crit his fist.
"We were just talking here."
Stratton motions vaguely toward the others. Gian and Randall stare their way.
"Artin and Cora said you ran into trouble. I was worried." "Just a little show and tell in Ratfall. More than boys could handle. My horse and I did fine. Nothing serious."
"Nothing serious? The ghost horse killed a man or close to it?"
"What's going on? What's the meeting?"
"Why wasn't I invited?"
"Come, sit down and you'll find out. But you won't like it."
He should count his blessings. His partner is in one piece, not wounded, not being sucked dry of heart and soul and sense by the necromant. Whatever's going on here, Crit presumes to think it's better than what he expected to find. Partner and witch in some unholy sex fest. But that doesn't turn out to be the case.
"So these fates are in the mix. So what? Why does that mean we can't do anything?"
Critias asks incredulously when they've explained.
"Can't kill Shan. Not because he won't die, but because some superstition says we'd better not interfere? I'm not trying to explain that to the commander by myself." "We can still kill him,"
Stratton assures him, canting his chair up on its back legs as if he lives here.
"With different tactics, a new approach. It'll be harder than we thought, that's all,"
Randall adds.
"How does knowing about this tube make anything harder than it was before?" Crit says, exasperated. "It may already have done everything it's going to do," says Jihan, eyes pinwheeling. "It won't do anything on its own. It's who does what with it, not what it does."
That starts a free-for-all about how and when and who and should and can't, which makes Crit's head spin. Finally, he says,
"I gotta take this to the Riddler. It's above my rank to decide."
Silence drops over them like a hawk plummeting from the clouds to strike a rabbit, immediate and terminal. They take stock of one another, these more-than-mortal helpers of the sacred band, and then of him and Strat.
"You don't understand," says Ishard, damning Crit succinctly.
"I think I do, witch. However you plan to help us, all you wiser beings, it is and will be the sacred band's mission. We do the fighting and we do the bleeding. If you're wrong, we'll do the dying."
Tone too cynical, retort too sharp, but Crit can't help himself.
"And it's the Riddler's to say whether any of our tactics or procedures change because of some old dart tube that washed up on the downwind beach a decade ago. If it's so damned special with all these attributes, why hasn't it done anything until now?"
He reaches out and takes the weapon in his hand. It's cool to the touch, as metal will be. Well made. Nothing extraordinary, a tube with a slide compartment.
The unearthly powers assembled here draw back like parents watching a toddler grab a loaded crossbow. He lets it drop onto the tabletop. It thumps like metal does. They relax. Randall said,
"Gian's holding on to it for now. She'll take it to the Riddler." "Fine," Crit agreed. "We'll take it. Let's go, Strap."
"Gian, now."
There was a pause as everyone considered.
"It's the middle of the night," Ishard observed.
"He doesn't sleep, and I think he's gonna love this one when he hears it," said Crit.
They hesitated. Crit's pulse pounded. He was the Riddler's executive officer, the senior stepson present. He'd given an order, one that Stratton, if not Gian, should obey, in front of the witch. Strat shrugged. His chair's legs hit the floor. He rose and came over to Crit.
"Shall we?"
That was good enough, all Crit had really wanted. To get his partner out of here. He expelled a breath he must have been holding for ages. Gian accompanied them to the threshold and said, "I'll meet you at Tempest's quarters. Go straight there." In her hand she held the metal tube, which couldn't possibly be the force multiplier of doom that everyone thought. Could it? Then Strat and Crit walked out the door, which opened and closed without a touch or a sound, into the moonlit night. When they reached their horses, Ishard was somehow there first. Black eyes and black cowl in the moonlight. Faint keening of wind at her back.
"Stratton,"
Ishard asked conspiratorially,
"who's in the Mage Guild now?"
"The old Mage Guild. On the Street of Arcana? Now? I don't know. Crit? It's abandoned, isn't it?"
Crit said,
"I can't say. As far as I know, it's derelict."
The cowl seemed to flicker, no face beneath the hood, just a slash of mouth and those infernal eyes like an owl's eyes in the dark.
"Not tonight. It isn't."
Before Crit could ask the infuriating witch if that was a hint or what she meant, she was gone in a flutter of wings and a pop that made your ears ring. Behind, the house was dark, empty as if no one had been there in years. The little gate swung askew on its hinges back and forth, creaking every time it moved. So, just to be thorough, they went by the old Mage Guild on their way back to the barracks. It was deserted, locked up tight.
"Life is short. Death is simple. Dreams are complex," says Ascalon, stepping over bodies in Shamshi's rest place. Corpses of men slain at Chironea. And the wizard boy beside him says,
"Show me."
"Nightmares are the stuff of legend," says the Lord of Dream and Shadow.
And the Bandaran youth says,
"Teach me."
"Meridian is my realm," says the regent of the seventh sphere, as the archipelago's main island coalesces out of a pastel sea, its crystal quays manifesting beneath their feet. And the former stepson says,
"Do you need a son and heir?"
"Could be," says the entelechy of dreams.
End of chapter 32. Chapter 33, Dreams of Immortality. She hadn't come to him since the night he and Tempest had made their first circuit of the barracks together. Nico and his commander made that same circuit the next day, in the golden air of summer. Tempest let him drive the chariot. He'd worked his body all that day getting ready for this morning when the Riddler had promised him he could ride. His thighs ached from the back of his knees up, blending their complaints with the soreness of his flanks and of his back.
What if she never comes to me again?
He had practiced sword play with Sink yesterday and wrestled with Stratton hand to hand when Strat came out from town, unhappy about something and unbeatable because of it. He'd run three laps around the barracks, making his lungs recall their job. His commander watched him too much, stayed at the training field too much. Those hooded eyes took his measure and slid away or caught his and shocked him, probing deep when he missed a parry or went to his knees in the dirt, or was knocked off his feet by Strat.
What if the Riddler has driven her away somehow?
All last night, Tempest worked at his table in the little room they shared, lit by a single candle. Now the dawn was breaking through the clouds. Somewhere thunder rumbled. For the first time in many days it was going to rain. And the Riddler still sat there working when Nico said,
"I'll get the horses ready. My mare and your big troth stud."
The horse Abarsis had given Tempest was his favorite.
"Do that," his commander said. "We'll get it done before the rain."
Thunder grumbled. Outside, the sunrise had a lurid cast. Towering cloud banks, nearly purple. Crimson rays and golden spears slicing through. Rain from those clouds would pour when it came. Before nightfall, the thunder promised. They hadn't talked about the goddess since the day on the hill. He didn't want to talk about it. She'd come to him after Tempest left for town, and when she'd gone he felt like a boy who'd skulked off into the woods with his first love, and later fears to be discovered. He took rain gear down with him to the stables, a waxed mantle and his most duty-worn leathers, oldest sword belt. With all of Tempest's gear, just in case the heavens opened up while they were riding. Doing simple things, too long denied, would help him regain his equilibrium. He couldn't wait to feel his mare between his legs. He took extra care with the horses, grooming, bitting, picking pebbles from hooves and combing burrs from manes. Stable boys came and he chased them away. This was his to do. The pleasures of life shouldn't be handed off to others. But Tempest hadn't arrived by the time both mounts were gleaming, saddled and bridled and stomping in their stalls. Something had happened to delay him. He unbridled both, unsaddled them, and went up to the loft to get the horses some hay to munch while they waited. She finds him there, amid the sweet hay and the straw. He feels her before he sees her. Though he's fully dressed, it's as if her hair slides along his back. He's on his knees in the hay. He looks behind him. She's standing over him, so tall, so perfect in every curve and line. "Nico," she says, and the hayloft smells like meadow, sweeter than it's ever been.
He doesn't know what to say to her. What does he call her?
He says, "You could have told me." Does she shimmer in this light? He sits back on his haunches. She kneels down too, tossing her head.
It makes no difference. Why should it?
She reaches out to him, just a light touch of her finger on his cheek, on his mouth. He kisses her fingertips. Her hand runs down his neck, to his chest, to his hips, and up again. She pushes him backward with one finger on his chest, and he's helpless, weak as a newborn foal, vanquished and surmounted in the hay.
Too much panoply, too much gear. Let me see you, she says. My work, your body.
She won't touch his armor or his loin guard. He doesn't know how he knows, but he knows she won't. He does it while her eyes hold his the whole time. He strips naked in the straw before her, his body out of hand, making suggestions inappropriate to a goddess.
Turn over on your stomach.
Her honey-colored hair sweeps across his back, his flanks, and those cool hands soothe every aching muscle. He says,
I want to look at you.
She says,
is that all you want?
He rolls onto his back and those eyes take his breath away again. Her green dress is soft, caught with two pins at her shoulders, linen, draping, then not. There's nothing between them. He can't hold back. On his knees, then on his feet, he puts his hands around that waist and lifts as if he were lifting his dancing girl on the beach. He hasn't been strong enough to be so bold since then. She wraps limber legs around his waist and he lowers her so slowly and catches her. She's inflaming every inch of him, wherever their skin meets, long thighs slipping over him, long legs locked around his hips. He looks up. Their lips are searching. He's lost again and again whenever their mouths meet, lost in amber eyes and hair like summer. Her arms are around his neck. She catches his lower lip in white teeth when he tries to speak. She's light as a feather, limbs entwining. She sets him afire wherever their bodies meet. Perfect flesh touches his chest, his waist, his hips. He tries again.
This can't go. We can't keep. I don't know what. Of course it can. Of course we will. Of course you do. Lie back down.
He barely has enough control to do as he's bid, but he does it. Long legs unwinding. He can't help himself. Doesn't want to try. He makes an abject and complete surrender. Whatever else this may be, his body knows what love is when it wraps around him. He must be very still now. He knows the rules. She lies atop him, slips along him. The heat of her makes him dizzy. He lives forever in those sky-wide eyes, in that smile, in that meadow of silken hair. She's the wind on his face, the softest grass caressing him, his neck and his chest. puffs of breath make him shiver, here, there, everywhere. She's so soft, so strong, so gentle, so insistent, so abandoned, so joyous. She enfolds him. Then it's over. She stops. She sits up. He reaches out and takes a lock of hair in his fingers, not pulling, just wanting to hold on. He's never feared more in the heat of battle that a wrong move might lose the day. "Don't go. Please stay," he says. He can't help it. She looks around at him and says, "You'll be stronger. All you were, and more." And her eyes sparkle as if tears might be there. "What is it?" he asks, sitting up, desperate for one more embrace, one more moment of forever. One more breath with his face buried in her neck. One more instant with that body so sinuous and smooth in his arms. It's all he can think about, all he's ever wanted. But she's standing over him. That green dress, falling from her shoulders to her ankles, hugs every curve the way he wants to do. Bits of hay are stuck to its linen hem. She looks down at him. "You may call me by my name," she says, "next time." Then she's gone in a flash, slipping like a deer through the hay and the straw and away. Now he's naked in a hayloft and hoping no one chances upon him. Why can't he talk to her? Why can't he make her answer his questions? Why can't he make her stay?
"Get dressed. Get out of here before the stable boys come."
He slides down the ladder using just his hands, boots tied by their laces over his shoulder. Then he sees Crit's chestnut and Stratton's bay ghost horse, and he knows why the Riddler didn't come. It's uphill, just a slight incline to the Riddler's quarters. He jogs there, testing his wind. Better. He's always better once she's come and gone. When he reaches the commander's quarters, he hears them talking. He knocks. Tempest, Jihan, Strat, and Crit are all inside. One look tells him this isn't a social call. "Life to you, stepsons, and everlasting glory," Nico says. He hasn't seen Crit in far too long. Neither stepson speaks. "And to you, Jihan."
"And to you, Stealth," says Jihan in that husky voice. "Riddler?"
"Let's walk up the hill," Tempest suggests, "while we talk. There are too many in here now." A voice like shale sliding today. Crit and Strat are looking at Nico askance. Jihan is not looking at him at all. They file outside, Nico on his commander's right, Jihan on his left, Strat and Crit behind.
"What's happened, Riddler?"
"The tube you gave Lysis, our mage and Ishard think it's a problem." "And Jihan agrees," Tempest says, not looking at him, watching where he walks. The others don't speak.
"What kind of problem?"
Nico asks as quietly as he's able, with stepsons and Thebans all around, eyeing the senior staff out for a walk in the sullen morning light. "Wait," Tempest says. And he waits, just pacing his commander, glad he's stronger, glad he has his sword belt. He knows that voice the way he knows his own soul. The Riddler is not happy
today.
Tempest leads them to the hilltop, but not to either altar. They hunker down in a circle, out near the break.
Now, the Riddler says, again, Jihan first, then Crit, for stealth, all of it.
Crit looks at the grass, centering their little circle. Strat stares at Nico, a distant gaze as if he's staring at the dead, and then away, past Jihan toward the horizon and the building storm.
As you wish, Riddler.
Nico, Jihan says, when the band sewed Shamshi in that skin, something started that can't be easily undone, or stopped. That youth has a hand on him, guiding him, a destiny that must play out. You gave an ancient weapon to Lysis the Theban. That poison is very old, not for men to wield. Nor should a mortal be struck down with it. If Lysis is right, and this Shamshi was wounded by that dart, he will die of it, or be changed by it. And if he does not die, he will be a terrible threat. To men, perhaps to gods. The whole sacred band has tried to catch and kill him, and failed. If he lives still, he is very angry.
Nico has to say it. I tried to tell the commander, anyone who would listen, that there was something wrong about that one.
It sounds like an excuse. Nico had taken Sham to Bandera long ago.
He's my problem. I helped make him. I will kill him. I said it before. I say it again. He's mine. I should have killed him when I had the chance. As you say, he's angry. If he lives long enough, I'll have that chance again.
It's not so simple, Crit says flatly. If I understand the threat, what Jihan Randall and Ishard are saying, it may be only you who can kill him.
But you didn't fare too well against him last time, however and wherever that battle was joined. He hurt you badly. And now, with his ancient weapon, if we haven't killed him, we've made him stronger.
Nico's mouth dries up.
I won that battle, Critias, or close enough, but you can't comprehend it.
Shamshi's rest place, so like Chironea, flashes before his inner sight. Men stagger backward, impaled, moaning. He considers how much discord the Riddler will tolerate here today. If Crit needs to test Nico's fitness one-on-one, Nico will be happy to oblige, now or any time. In the face of insult, it's hard to stifle anger, betray nothing with eyes or body. He sits very still and fixes Crit with his emptiest stare. The silence reigns too long. The Riddler doesn't intervene, merely watches, one hand on Jihan's arm.
Crit, says Strat curtly, tell him the rest.
Crit scoffs. I don't believe in destiny, but I'll tell you. Randall and Jihan think the boy, Shamshi, is protected by some powerful ally. And you're not, stealth.
Commander, stepsons, Jihan, Shamshi is a Bandaran who could not master Mutt. He's inexperienced. He has weaknesses. And we have this ancient weapon.
Nico's mouth is still dry. He's cold.
Long spears thunking into flesh.
Ever since Chironea, I've been seeing that battle plane in my mind.
So have I,
Crit says reluctantly.
And I,
Strat admits, looking over his shoulder and all around at the approaching storm, rubbing his arms.
Meaningless, Tempest growls like a bear.
Not so, Riddler, my love, says Jihan. When you feel that, you feel Shamshi reaching out. Guard your minds, and I will guard the tube. It must go back to my father's ocean. If it falls into the wrong hands, then woe unto men and gods.
Nico doesn't want to hear this or believe it.
We'll get him. I will. I'm committed. I have been. For a while. I need to get my strength back, is all. It's mine to do, before the gods.
Not gods, Jihan slaps the ground with her hand. Angry fates. So different, Nico. So different. Lightning forks the sky in the distance as if the gods agree. Thunderheads are massing. Here comes the storm. The thunderclap comes rolling, finally, on a wind that whips back Jihan's hair.
Commander,
Nico pleads for understanding, for the Riddler's wisdom.
How can the best of the stepsons be so cowed? And how can Jihan, more powerful than many gods, be so full of dire warnings?
His commander's eyes, blazing, catch his and hold, setting Nico's brain afire. He sees ranks upon ranks in that gaze, war after war, dying and crying and carnage and bloodbath that make Chironea seem like a child's playground.
Commander?
He asks again when Tempest doesn't answer. And then Nico thinks about the wound that Tempest sustained on that battle plane. And his own, so hard to heal. And he begins to feel a chill leaching into his flesh. Probably from sitting too long in the morning grass, he tells himself after being so long abed. With a storm blowing in. Tempest looks them over, each in turn, and says at last,
"This world that neither gods nor men have made is an ever-living fire, with portions kindling and portions going out. We are either the portions kindling or the portions going out. Which do you want to be? Stepsons. Jihan, we will not give up the Thebans if that's what the fates are angry about, and we will not give up our lives. We will meet this enemy, whether mad youth or maddened tool of destiny, and we will best it in single combat or vanquish it by other means, if the god allows."
Crit starts to speak. Strat elbows him. Neither says a word.
"And if this enemy has help, Tempest?" Jihan wants to know. "Help from forces stronger than you've met before? Help from destiny itself? Help who'll bring down gods if they can? You are not the only one who teaches lessons, Riddler."
The commander gets to his feet, estimating the inbound storm.
"I've fought gods before. I'm still here. We all are. Gather the shards of your courage. Patch together what resolve you can. We'll find this thing and kill it. Jihan, give me that dart tube."
He holds out his hand.
"Tempest, no," says Jihan. "It needs to go away."
"I'll decide that. Perhaps it can go away another day.
If it's all you say, if it can bring down gods and destinies and even fates, it may have a part to play in this yet.
Jian is on her feet now, so everyone rises up. The uncanny Froth Daughter, child of wind and wave, mother of the Riddler's changeling son, meekly hands to Tempest this little tube about which too much to Nika's mind is being made. This fight coming is not a battle of weapons, but a battle of wills. "Please let me take it to my father's sea," she pleads with Tempest. And the commander says,
"In Enlil's good time. I'll give up no advantage out of hand, not for this battle."
Back down the hill strides the Riddler, Jihan half running after him, grabbing him by the arm. And Crit hurries to catch up. Nika won't, can't yet, go so fast. Stratton paces him.
"So, Nika, how shall we defeat this Shamshi who's too shy to come out to play with all the other boys?"
Once, Stratton had been the most talented fighter in Tempest's sacred band.
He might be, again, with Nika weakened and Strat's shoulder healed.
The ethos of the sacred band decrees that no man fights alone. But Sham won't risk being outnumbered. Nika says,
"I can take him. You or I can. One-on-one, man-to-man, if we can just lure him into the open."
"I think so, too," says Stratton.
And the two fighters walk down the hill together, agreed in principle.
"We're not letting the Riddler take on this enemy if Sham's as dangerous as they think," Stratton growls.
The two vow to practice with each other every day from now on until the foe is vanquished.
"It's you or me, Nika, who'll best him."
"I know,"
Nika said.
"According to Crit, it's mine alone to do. I go first if the goddess allows."
"The goddess?"
"Slip of the tongue. I've been stuck here with Thebans too long," Nico says with his best boyish grin as a wind ruffles his hair and blows it in his eyes. Strat says,
"I need to look more closely at this goddess of yours. I hear you've been seeing her regularly."
And both men laugh, relieved to find something to joke about in all of this.
"It's Mart, for me, that will make the difference, Strat," Nico confides as they near the Riddler's quarters. "A discipline Shamshi couldn't master."
"It's a shot for me, but don't tell Crit," says Stratton and winks at Nico in the morning's gathering storm.
But both of them, and Critias too, have admitted they see Chironea in their dreams. All but Tempest have confessed to seeing it, and perhaps their commander sees it as well. Tempest is not a man to admit to weakness, even among his closest friends. Chironea haunts the others. That revelation chills Nico to the bone. Jian takes Tempest away to her quarters in the sulky morning light. The Froth Daughter will not be denied. She wrestles with him in words and deeds. Sparring with Jihan is always his pleasure. Baiting her has always made him glad. But today she is petulant. She is nearly as strong as he. Or perhaps, after Chironea, just as strong. He finally gets his knees on her shoulders and her scale armor off.
"Don't bite," he advises. She bites. She kicks and scratches and throws a tantrum worthy of a hurricane.
They almost wreck her quarters before they're done, and he's nearly panting. She sees it. See? You are not yourself. This war with destiny has debilitated you.
You think so? Let's find out.
A long and demanding interval later, when they lay on the floor amid the ruins of her bed, she turned in the crook of his arm and said,
Riddler, I could not bear to lose you.
If you keep destroying property and throwing tantrums, I'm going to send you back to Stormbringer, finned tail between your legs.
But his heart isn't in it. She is right. He should be able to best Jihan in any wrestle, any love play, any fight. And he couldn't today. Not quite. She slaps his stomach hard with her hand.
Stubborn Riddler, that partner of yours, Nico, is in deep trouble. If not for me, then for him, let me take the tube back to the sea at the edge of time. Before it falls into the wrong hands again. Or its darts get stuck in the wrong flesh again. I can drop it into an abyss down a vent where there is no sunshine, or into a volcano on the ocean floor. No meddling forces will ever bring it up again.
Let's see, first,
if we need it. Or are you so anxious to get away from me? In such a hurry to leave? Once again he takes hold of her, and it does him good to spar with this creature more than human which can't be hurt by whatever strength he might bring to bear in passion or frustration or rage. The Storm God likes this game and adds his lightning and his thunder above their heads, storm horses running free on heaven's endless plain of cloud. But when they both lie flat, sated and exhausted, she comes round to it again.
What of our son Cyrus, if the fates smite you and yours for your impudence? He'll be fatherless. Even now you know he's difficult to control, or you would have brought him with you.
Their son wasn't a conversation for today, or for any day but one on which a man faces his mistakes and tries to fix what's gone wrong. Such talk reminds him of how big the smallest error can become, with repercussions at first undreamed, then long lamented. Here, now, they face Shamshi, another youth gone bad, a threat that lay dormant among them till an ancient remedy went awry. Our son stays in Lemuria till he's grown in body and mind, and he has you if I should shrivel away like some thistle plucked from Hell's Gate. Are you truly worried? He came up on one elbow and scowled at her.
I thought you had more courage. Afraid of the fates? Those geriatric crones? Shamshi the wizard boy? He's barely old enough to shave. What fun would life be without worthy enemies?
If you love life, then having enemies may be worthwhile, but not if all you do is grieve. What about your mortal fighter Nicodemus that so many think so much of? Are you willing to risk him? He thinks this Shamshi is his foe to face.
Tempest lay back down, watching the darkening sky through her window.
He always does.
The Storm God immortalized you, and you are having second thoughts about this battle brewing, looking for any edge you can find. And Nico, not you, must surmount this halfling, this wizard's son, this tool of destiny. Even your Critias agrees.
We'll see about that.
Riddler, you can't keep him from it. You and he cheated the fates. Can your god not help Nico, give him strength?
Lightning stabbed the sky and lit up everything in Jihan's little room. Was Enlil volunteering aid or just laughing?
Nico won't ask and won't accept. I asked. I knew when I needed help.
So long ago, to balance off a curse. He hoped his curse was gone, but he could never be certain.
Remember, Jian, take care. Those who love me die of it.
Ha! As arrogant as ever, Riddler. Those you love are bound to spurn you. You remember that. If any of it were true, would I be here now?
But I don't love you. Just your body.
He teased her and she slapped at him. He grabbed her wrist.
Be careful this time, Jian. Truth be told, I'd miss you. Who else could take care of that ill-tempered Trosmere of yours and survive?
And they wrestled with each other once again, this time with embraces longer and more fervent, because even they might not have forever. They clung together until he remembered he had told Nicodemus to get their horses ready hours before. Then he left her alone there in her fit of pique that he should think riding with Nico was more important. But that was Jian. Everything her way or no way at all. He found Nico and Stratton slicked with sweat and dust and bits of grass, just bringing a training session to its close under a threatening indigo sky. Nico had dirt in his slate-colored hair, and Stratton's cobalt blue eyes were sparkling. Nico's quick, long limbs offset Stratton's greater strength and mass. If Nico had been on the muscle, the two were well enough matched. Rolling around in the grass and just their loin guards. Despite Strat's reach, Nico was never quite where Stratton thought he was. A few stepsons and Theban stood around, leaning on the fence, yelling time-honored sacred band advice and catcalls and daring Nico to show them where his famous disappearing scars had been.
"Which one did you bet on, Sink?" Tempest asked as he slid in between the horse tamer and Gorgias, the Theban whose face had been smashed once long ago.
"Stratton," said Sink, cold and analytical. "Nico's too weak."
And it went that way in the end, although both fighters declared the match a draw. Just as they were coming through the gate, arms over one another's shoulder, the sky turned black. Lightning smote the earth and thunder chased it. Next came the rain. First a few fat drops, then a spattering, then a torrent. Nico stood there with Stratton, both looking up at the sky and laughing in the pouring rain as it washed the sweat and dirt from them. And Tempest thought then that nothing was more worthwhile than what was growing in this whitewashed barracks where he has come to build a force such as men or gods have never seen. A force worth reckoning with if you were of a mind. And something was of that mind. And something else opposed it. He should have expected that. Battle in the heavens, battle on the earth, sanctuary. He got his favorite Tros despite the rain, and Nico got his sable mare, and they rode bareback in just loin guards outside the barracks walls, and inside them until the mud was too deep. Then brought in the horses, dried off, dressed, and tended their mounts. Normal men on a normal day. Doing normal things. This was what men fought for, what men died for. A chance at life and to fight on other days. The battle of your choice, of the body or the heart or the soul. Then Nico said, "Riddler, I need to tell you. She's still coming to see me." He was rubbing down his mare with a finishing cloth. And the day wasn't normal after that.
"Go carefully with this boy, now a man,
who could be so much more. Now of all times he must understand what is at stake. I need to help him find his way, even if it is not my way. Everything he is and can be hangs in the balance.
Uneasiness overcame him. He heard a restless rustling from the guard within. The fundament shifted under feet greater than his own. The very air he breathed was tainted with a strangeness he couldn't name as somewhere. Something very old and very strong assumed a new proportion. All his senses sharpened as if he were going into combat. Every rustle of straw, every gnat, every mote of dust and breath of man and horse came clear. So maybe he was going into battle here, if a different kind.
Nico, Tempest said, wishing it hadn't come to this. If she still visits you, if you're still seeing her, ask her for help.
Nico's mare was between them. Her freshly bedded stall smelled sweet of horse and hay. Tempest leaned back against the stall boards.
This is a troubled time. You're vulnerable.
And you aren't. Nico's angular face was impassive, hazel eyes empty. His arms hung loosely at his sides, his hands flexed, then quieted. The finishing cloth floated to the straw.
You know I'm not vulnerable in the way that you are.
Horses chewed their hay. This rhythm that bound man and horse together through so many centuries always soothed Tempest's heart. So sorely wounded, but now surely healed.
Always, but not today.
After Chironea, are you so certain, Riddler? I cannot ask for any more help. Not the kind you mean.
Soft voice, steady gaze, undaunted.
Even if I were worthy, I don't want it. It's not for such as me.
Resolute with all the strength and beauty of that mystic calm.
Why not? You want to battle more than human foes? How can you tell yourself you're up to it?
Tempest grabbed a brush from a box in the straw and began grooming the mare's near side all over again, watching Nico across her back.
I have my mind, my body, my soul, my mart. I'm not trading any of it away for special favors. You've taught me that nothing can be had without cost. What difference, asking or receiving more than is fitting from a goddess, or from Ascalon, or from the rest?
When you die, will you let Abarsis come and take you to your place in heaven? Is that not more than mortal help? And what of me and those who love you? Once you've fled to eternal rest and left us all here to struggle on without you.
Nico's mare gave a warning squeal. Tempest was currying her too hard. He stopped, put his elbows on her back and caught Nico's distant eyes.
Riddler!
Nico just shook his head, picked up the cloth, and rubbed his mare. Reserved. Watching his own hands.
I don't know. Even if I asked, why should the goddess help me? More. She comes and goes, does as she wishes. She's a real goddess. I'm just a man. Who am I to make demands?
They were skirting the issue, neither willing to say flatly that this struggle might be one no mortal man could win. And if so, Tempest must try his best to shield his right-side partner.
but only help from a god such as Enlil, or perhaps this foreign goddess Harmony, could truly protect Nicodemus now. "You're a weapon of the god," Tempest said. "A weapon has a right to be properly cared for. I have died, or close to it. How often for the storm god? I don't even remember how many times. I'll fight beside you, protect you if I can and however I can, but we may need more, this time, than I can provide. If you won't ask Harmony, then ask Enlil. You are still his avatar. To fight on other days, it's worth everything."
"Not to me," said Nico, without looking up. His damp, dark hair fell around a face too carefully composed.
"Not yet," said Tempest, and left his fighter alone to think things through.
Either Nico asked, or Tempest would ask on his behalf, and the result of that not even Tempest could foresee.
"You, fighter, adept of mind, avatar of Enlil in name but not in soul, take care, or lose all you've won at such great cost,"
the goddess Harmony had said to Nico on the jetty.
Her words kept ringing in Tempest's head. If he asked Enlil, could he get help for Nicodemus?
And if he could, should he?
What would be the result of asking Enlil to save a fighter whose true allegiance was to Mott, to justice, to balance,
wanting neither too much to live nor too much to die, said the code of the sacred band of Thebes, whose tutelary deity was Harmony, not Enlil.
Nico, a secular adept, a child of Mott, seemed sometimes more Theban than the Thebans. So perhaps this Harmony might be useful after all. He knew Nico wouldn't accept help at any price, as Tempest once did, even to live to fight on other days. And he knew just what kind of help he wanted for Nico. But it was costly, and of a rarefied kind. End of chapter 33. Chapter 34, Son of the Storm God. After the storm had passed, when the air smelled fresh and wet streets were bathed in sunlight, everyone in town heaved a sigh of relief. This bright, clear day made Sanctuary preen her feathers. On the avenue of temples the best of the city gleamed. Sun rays spangled all. The finest buildings, gilded and domed, the most piously tended lawns and the rich facades, where neglected gods held palsied sway. Kouros was leading a mission here today. He was flushed with pride. He had two stepsons supporting him, Artan and Lysis. They were armed and armored, full of the importance of it all. "See," Kouros said to Lysis and Artan, riding on his right, "I told you I could make the rain stop." "Of course you can, Kouros," Lysis called back politely, over their horses' hoofbeats clopping on slippery cobbles. Lysis didn't believe. Kouros knew. They rode three abreast up the avenue of temples headed to the palace through the gate of the gods, Kouros on the blue roan, Lysis on a hair-trigger chestnut from Crit's string, and Artan on an old brown gelding that Sink swore was as good a warhorse as the rest. Chorus wanted to make sure that the Theban, Lysis, saw Vashenka's largest temple in all its majesty, and understood the respect due to a son of Sanctuary's one true storm god. Up to the gates of the palace they jogged. Chorus gave the guard